Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Earned 5-Star Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Voles, site manager, emperor, supreme warlord, and defender of the faith over at onefootdown.com. And folks, we are continuing our off-season, let's talk much, much more about college football mode. I'm all alone today. Jude and Brendan, neither one of them could make it, but that's all right. I have a special guest for a special team. We're going to talk about Pitt football, college football, Big East, ACC, just kind of a whole big mess of stuff here with Amanda Gotze, who covers Pitt, and we're going to get to that right now. All right, everybody, joining the show now is Amanda Gotze from the Johnstown Tribune Democrat. Amanda, what's up?
Hello, how are you?
Great. And Amanda covers Pitt over there. And I'll tell you what, I'm pretty sure that you were two-thirds of this podcast is pretty jealous about that, because we love talking about Pitt. We absolutely adore bringing Pitt up onto the show, believe it or not.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. I love covering Pitt. I love covering Pitt football. It's such a interesting thing to cover a Power Five football team in a pro football town. But at the same time, you know, there's like a bunch of, you know, pretty big deal, like a Hall of Fame players that have gone to Pitt. But, you know, pitting has become a verb, like the way that they find ways to lose games, they should definitely be winning. But it's a fun time. I enjoy it.
Well, they have the Pitt superpowers.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the super weapon. Thank you. Sorry.
Yes, super weapon. Yes, it's, you know, it is used to defeat, you know, knock off number two Clemson, knock off number two Miami. Maybe you lose at home to Georgia Tech 5 days after they fire their coach. That's pitting. So flip side of the coin.
So Amanda, we're really starting to like claw our way into the off season. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that one of the great things about college football is still how regional it is, despite like ESPN and Fox's attempt to nationalize and NFLize the entire sport.
Yeah.
But it's just still so regional, which is just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, you know, people get wrapped up in their own programs, their own problems, their own wins. And we try to take the off season and just go off into the distance and start pecking around the country. And like every program's got great stories, has, you know, fun history and all sorts of stuff. So we try to bring, we're trying to bring more of all of the college football to our listeners. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, and maybe some people, other people out there that hate Notre Dame, that maybe they're hate listening to us. Although I'm a pretty bad hate listen, because if you listen, if you hate me and you listen more than 10 minutes, you are probably not a human being. So we really want to wrap our heads around Pitt inside of the college football world that we're slowly but surely like going towards a different planet in many, many ways. So I guess my first question is, you know, where's Pitt in all this? Like, I mean, are they comfortable? How do they feel about being in the ACC, you know, West Virginia and, you know, what, like West Virginia and Penn State on different ends of that, like this, that whole area there is just, it's kind of weird how they're just like, we're going to go our own way this way. We're going to go this way. Like that's real hate when you don't, when you can't stand being around somebody that you're in a different room, like that, like 50 year marriage where, you know, 40 of it has been pure hate. But yeah. Where's Pitt's, I mean, where's their head on this? Are they really enjoying the ACC experience? Do they secretly wish they were in the Big Ten? Do they want things to just dial back about, you know, 45 years? How's this working?
I don't know. I think Pitt does like being in the ACC because, well, I mean, I know they did away with the divisions and obviously the you know, Coastal and Atlantic are gone now, but
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Coastal Chaos, man. I'm going to miss it so much. But I do think they like being in the ACC because they have been able to be competitive. Like I was, you know, kind of looking at stuff, you know, looking at the schedule and stuff just earlier today. And, you know, it's kind of weird even as a beat writer to, you know, like every year I knew that here's six games. I mean, other than the pandemic year, but here's their six opponents. And, you know, now we're in a different world where they're not going to be playing the same six teams. It's only just the three. And, you know, so that's something new and different. It's kind of like uncharted territory. And, but I think that college football might be trending towards no divisions. I'm married to a Penn State fan, so that's
fine.
And he is very, he's like, he really wants the Big Ten to do away with divisions. I mean, I'm sure it has nothing to do with Penn State playing in the same division as Michigan and Ohio State.
He's still having Legends of Leaders whiplash, isn't he?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. When they got rid of those names, he was like, thank God, I can't believe it. But yeah. So I think that I do wonder if they might do away with divisions once like USC and UCLA are officially in. So we'll see. But I think Pitt is enjoying the ACC so far, or at least they have the last handful of years for sure. If this goes to like two super conferences like SEC versus the Big Ten or whatever, I don't know what's going to happen to Pitt then. I don't know where they end up. You know, it would depend on how many teams these conferences are willing to expand. And I mean, obviously I think they'd be a better fit with the Big Ten, but I don't, the ACC is in a very weird place with all of this right now, with, kind of being tied with the grant of rights agreement that these schools would have to pay a lot of money to get out of. So I don't know. It's something that I've definitely, you know, we've all been watching and, you know, it's just kind of up in the air right now.
Did there kind of get a feel of normalcy last year with getting West Virginia back on the schedule? I'm not sure how many years Pitt's lined up to play West Virginia again, but did it finally be like, oh, okay, this feels like a college football season because we get to play these jerks across the way?
Yes.
I mean, it just, you know, one of the things about, you know, college football expansion or conference realignment and all this stuff, it's just been the loss of some of these rivalries. And honestly, I mean, the Backyard Brawl has been one of the best in college football for a long time. And there's so many out there that are affected like that. And if you just like dive into like a lot of these rivalries, and Pitt, West Virginia is a great one. There's a lot of like hardcore college football hate, college football pranks, college football nonsense that people should love in that series. So bringing it back, is everyone like, finally we can hate again?
Yes. Honestly, like the lead up to last season was just like, it seemed like more fun. And it seemed like people were, because that was the first game of the year. And then it was
right.
A Thursday night, and it was going to be on ESPN and everything. And it you could almost like feel a buzz. Like people were really excited to get to play that game. Again, it had been 11 years they hadn't played. They'll play three more in this series. And then I believe they've already renewed it for another 4-game series between 2029 to 32, I think 2029 to 32. It's just a totally, it's totally different to have that game on the schedule than to not have it. I think that wound up being the highest attended sporting event in Pittsburgh history. There were over 70,000 people there. I mean, it was one of those things where like,
They were out there to prove it, like bring this back. Yeah, like this is important.
Absolutely. And there were, you know, we actually heard from some like Pitt alumni, like that, you know, they had played at Pitt during that 11-year span. Like I know Kenny Pickett even was asked about it. And he was like, yeah, I hate that I never got to play West Virginia because, you know, like that's the big rival, right? You know, he got to play twice against Penn State, but he never got to play against West Virginia. And it is like a special kind of hate. I remember last year on media day, somebody asked one of the Pitt linebackers, Savasia Dennis, if it was hard to like gin up that hate, because he's like, you know, you don't know the guys from West Virginia. You haven't had a history of playing this rivalry. And Savasia Dennis is like, it's not hard at all to hate. He said, we put on that uniform, we hate who they tell us to hate. He said, I have no problem hating West Virginia. Like it was so much fun. It was so much fun to have that be the first game of the season. And I mean, I do wish that Pitt and Penn State played every year too.
Right.
Because that's like another, you know, one of their old school rivals. But for me, like Pitt and Penn State stopped playing, I think in their last game was like 2000 before they picked it up again in, that's 16. Yeah. In 2016. So there was a long period of like, you know, my life where that just didn't exist, but that West Virginia game, that was still, you know, that was still happening up until 2011. And I really think, you know, if you have to ask, I think a lot of Pitt fans, certainly like millennial fans, and probably even some Gen Xers, which team they hate more, the answer would be West Virginia over Penn State. Like it's, you know, there are stories about, I know Pat Bostic, he's a broadcaster for Pitt now. He was a quarterback of the team in, for the 13-9 game when Pitt upset number 2 West Virginia. And he was talking last year. I remember him saying like, oh, we, you know, I'm on the bus and it pulls into Morgantown and we just start getting pelted with bottles. Like the West Virginia fans were hurling bottles at the Pitt bus as it like pulled onto campus.
Very, like, very Miami. Like,
yeah, it's a thing. The hate is real. And, it's just been a lot of fun to have that rivalry back.
Well, you guys kind of have an old school feel going on this year. I mean, it feels like the band's back together with the Big East. I mean, Pitt's got Cincinnati, West Virginia, Virginia Tech, Louisville, you know, Notre Dame as the basketball component,
right.
Syracuse, Boston College. I mean, this is very like Big East 2009, 2008, going on, you know, on the schedule, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. I was thinking about that last night. I'm like, oh, you know, their primary opponents in the new ACC scheduling format are going to be every year. They're going to play Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and Boston College. So that's kind of like the old Big East. And then They already had the Cincinnati series scheduled and the West Virginia series. So, and throwing, like you said, Louisville and Notre Dame. I think it's interesting. It'll be an interesting season this year to play some of those opponents and some of these teams that they know very well or have known very well in the past.
It always feels like I get a little bit of pushback from Notre Dame fans when I start talking about Pitt. Now, mm-hmm. I have a special place in my heart for hate for Pitt. Mm-hmm. It's right there next to my hate for Michigan State.
Okay.
And I think you would find like a majority of Notre Dame fans the hate is like, it's all directed towards Michigan's way. Mm-hmm. A lot towards USC's way. And I'm with them on that. But I think what people will fail, even Notre Dame fans kind of fail to realize, is how many times Notre Dame and Pitt have played. I mean, this is a long, long series. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and we played Purdue for quite a while. And mm-hmm. this series here in the last, you know, 40 years mm-hmm. has been a lot more exciting than that one ever was during that, you know, time span. Right. It's certainly a lot better than playing Navy. I'm the Notre Dame fan that just keeps carrying the banner to drop Navy altogether.
Yeah.
But I mean, this game, you know, the Notre Dame Pitt, while, you know, like I said, a lot of Notre Dame fans kind of like push it to the side, like, eh, it's one that I look forward to a lot. I kind of wonder how do Pitt fans feel about that? Would they rather see Notre Dame on the schedule most years? Are they pissed that we're not in a conference full time and don't want to deal with us that way? Or, you know, how's that all work?
I think it's kind of split. I think most fans do like that they play Notre Dame, you know, every so often. I mean, you'll hear fans complain about like they're not in a conference, blah, 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 you know. But I think for the most part, people do recognize how many times the two teams have played each other. I think the only teams that Pitt has played more than Notre Dame in their history I know for sure it's West Virginia and Penn State. And I think they've played maybe a handful more games against Syracuse than Notre Dame, but those are the four teams they've played more than anyone. So I think a lot of Pitt fans are like, know that and respect that, the historical aspect of it. And also, you know, Southwestern Pennsylvania, we are lousy with Catholics. And I say this as somebody who went to Catholic school for 9 years. So there are a lot of people that kind of have a soft spot for Notre Dame or, you know, had family or somebody that grew up. Actually, I have a soft spot for Notre Dame because my grandfather, not my Irish grandfather, my Croatian Catholic grandfather.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was obsessed with Notre Dame. My dad always likes to say, oh, your grandfather brainwashed you with that Notre Dame stuff.
Absolutely.
But so there is like, there are people that have a soft spot for Notre Dame. And I'll say this is, I know that that is one of the, at least from what I have heard and from what I've read is it's a very popular trip for Pitt fans. It's about like a, you know, 5-6 hour drive for most people from
right,
the area.
Right.
And I've gone twice for Pitt Notre Dame. I've gone out to South Bend. And also I've heard nothing but like glowing reviews of Pitt fans about Notre Dame fans. Like they've all been, and that's been my experience as well, is like been very helpful. You know, been
we're,
nice.
We're the worst.
You know,
we're absolutely the worst. We're so stupidly nice.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people really like it for that. I know a lot of people that they will go every time Pitt plays out in South Bend. They'll make the trip every time. So I think that there are definitely people here that, you know, also really want to, they really hate Notre Dame, but they enjoy going out to see the game and they like that Pitt plays them. So, but yeah, there's a very long history between the two schools.
Yes, it's so long that most of Notre Dame is like old. Because Notre Dame has so many quote unquote rivalries, mm-hmm. we've always had to classify them as like big R and little R mm-hmm. Rivalries. And you know, Pitt has been in the Big R category before for sure, and then they moved down to little R. So it's when I say the word rivalry, it's kind of like a a loose term around here,
right,
but it's one of the few old ones that we have that actually doesn't have a traveling trophy, which is like one of my pet peeves. Like, why do you know about the Pitt Spirit Urn?
The Spirit Urn, no.
So, when Pitt closed down the old stadium, they had the spirit. Well, it was a spirit box. We call it the urn.
I was at that game, but
so they went out to the middle of the field, and I think he was on a ladder, and they had this box opened up, and it was supposed to be. It was a huge huge moment for Pitt. You know, they beating Notre Dame in the last game there. But they had this box opened up, and like they were capturing the spirit of Pitt, and then it went into the box, and they close it. So, number one, if you don't know what it is, I need you to find it and find out where that thing's at.
Okay.
And number two, like, would that is that not like what a rivalry trophy should be? Like, I know now, like they've been just been creating this weird broken bits of chair and these nonsense, but like that seems like if this was a 1924, that automatically would be become a like a big that's a Big Ten style traveling trophy
for sure. Yeah. I'm gonna look into that. Yeah, I was at that game when Pitt beat Notre Dame in the final game in Pitt Stadium. I was there, but I do not remember the Spirit Urn.
I mean, if you open it up, I think the pride of Bob Davey will probably come out and melt your face on Raiders of the Lost Ark. But You never know.
Moon Township's own Bob Davey.
You gotta love him. Yeah, football, all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So, explain Pat Narduzzi to me. Now, Notre Dame fans have long. I mean, we've known Narduzzi for quite a while. With his time at Michigan State, and Pat Narduzzi over the last like few years has really like. Turned out the Notre Dame hate. If there's any quote from an ACC coach, an anonymous ACC coach that's just slamming the crap out of Notre Dame, we're all pretty sure it's Pat Narduzzi.
Oh wow,
anonymous or not, we're pretty sure it's Pat. So I want you to explain.
I don't know that I would think that. Pat, I remember I started covering the team in 2018. That was my first year. And I actually had, before I knew I was going to be working, covering Pitt and being a beat writer, I had bought tickets in the summer to go to the game in South Bend. Cause my dad had never been and he wanted to go, even though he doesn't really like Notre Dame. He kind of likes Notre Dame. So, he was rooting for Pitt, but he's like, I had gone out, in 2012 for that crazy 3 overtime game. With a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah, I was there.
And with a friend of mine, and my dad just, like, you could tell it just, like, bothered him that, like, I had gone, like, to this, like, legendary football place without him. So we went in 2018. But I remember Pat's press conference, he was like, hey, I love Notre Dame. Like, it's a great school. I love the campus. Cause I think somebody had asked him like, how do you keep prepare your players for playing in, a place like this, with all the tradition and everything. And he said, hey, I love Notre Dame. It's a great school. he said I'm Catholic. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful campus. I love going there and going to the Basilica. And he said, but he said, I just tell my players to like, it's just a, it's another game. Like, yeah, it's a place that's full of tradition and history, but like he said, like, you have to just tell them it's any other game. Like, they can't get caught up in that. And I don't think he hates Notre Dame. I don't think he hates Notre Dame that much. But if you're asking me to explain Pat Narduzzi to you, I don't really know how to do that. he's a guy that I totally get. If he is the coach of the team that is your rival or on the other sideline, you hate him. Like, he is a guy that see how he can engender that hate, but he's a guy that also, if he's coaching your team, you probably, you know, he has his detractors, but they've kind of gotten a lot quieter over the last two seasons.
Well, he's been, I guess we say that because he's been, to me, the more outspoken ACC coach when it comes to Notre Dame and their affiliation mm-hmm. with the ACC, like him, Dave Dorn, mm-hmm. those two kind of like shoulder to shoulder, like, hey, we don't like this, while they're, you know, while the athletic directors are like, hey, be quiet because they bring us a lot of money, you know, exactly. It's all good.
Yeah.
And then the whole like Kenny Pickett tampering thing for someone who covers Notre Dame, like this is like, to me, that was news to my ears. And number two, the way that I heard of how it went down was just some random fan or someone that knew him was like, hey, have you thought about transferring to Notre Dame? And Pat took that to the press podium and was like, yeah. they're contacting him like through back channels. Cause a fan asked him about it. Like, man, that takes a special kind of like, hey, now I kind of feel for him a little bit because, you know, once, you know, Pickett and Addison were blowing up, mm-hmm. he had something and then they're coming after him. I mean, he kind of feels like, you know, how does like old school kind of a guy like that deal with like this transfer portal era? Like, is he just secretly crushed?
You know, it's, I know he doesn't love all this. I mean, he's been pretty vocal about that. Like, and he was, you know, saying like, you know, it's a new era and everything, but, at the same time, I mean, the Addison thing was obviously, I mean, that was just, that was such a huge blow. And, you know, there were reports that Lincoln Riley had tampered and USC had tampered, and there was already this big money.
And Lincoln Riley's a bastard.
Yeah.
I'll agree with Pat on that. Lincoln Riley is a complete bastard. Sure.
And there was already this big money NIL deal in place, like $5 million NIL deal, in place for Jordan. So I know that was upsetting for him, to say the least. I think otherwise, like, that's obvious. That was a huge blow. It was a huge blow to the team and offense, obviously. But like this year, I was just looking last night at like who all is transferred out. And honestly, I'm kind of impressed that they've lost 12 transfers. But I'm kind of impressed that it wasn't more. And I don't mean that I think more kids would be leaving Pitt, but like, they do have certain groups where I'm like, I could see some of these guys, like, especially like defensive line. They always have a ton of defensive linemen, and got like, I don't know. I think they have like three super senior D tackles and one like redshirt senior D tackle. But honestly, like, the guys they lost in the transfer portal were guys that like, with the exception of losing their starting quarterback from last year, Keaton Slovis, these were not guys that were like producing a lot for the team.
Right.
So I think it's kind of impressive that he's been able to hang on to what he has, and the coaching staff as a whole, what they've been able to hang on to. I do think it's, you know, for him, it's like a struggle living in this new world, but they've also gotten some good guys through the transfer portal. They've added some guys. I mean, obviously they added former Notre Dame quarterback and Boston College quarterback, Phil Dracovic.
I have no idea who that is.
Yeah, right. let me send you an Instagram post from last week.
I was going to ask you, are they going to take away his Instagram ability
I think
at Notre Dame week?
I think it's since been deleted, to be honest.
The screenshots are out there. We all took them.
Oh, I know.
There's no.
Forever. Like,
I couldn't. That was the strangest moment that I've. I mean, it was just odd. We could not look. Phil, you know, Phil just couldn't beat out Ian Book. And hey, Ian Book is the all-time winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history. Whether Notre Dame fans hate to hear it because he wasn't like a Joe Montana, but I mean, the guy won football games, and he just wasn't going to beat that guy out. And like the internal hate, and then going to BC, and then talking smack, and he kept Notre Dame in his mouth the entire, you know, while he was at BC, which, you know, he a little egged on by the press, and you get that, you know, that's going to happen. But would keep bringing it up, but it's like, dude, do you really want to do this? Then they get shellacked, and then it's like you didn't even learn your lesson from the shellacking year. You drop that Instagram post, like it's a total BC thing to do. So, I just wondered if Pitt was going to take that away this year because, how many more times can you do that?
I don't know. Pitt plays both BC and Notre Dame this year. Which is really nice for me as a writer. Cause like, hey, that article is written.
Template.
Here's what we're going to be talking about all week. So you guys know, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody said, hey, maybe don't go on your social media. I know that when Kenny Pickett was here, he just wiped social media from his phone voluntarily during the season. Like he said that many times. He's like, yeah, I delete Twitter and Instagram from my phone. I don't during the season. I don't want to read comments and everything. And you know,
that's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah. To be honest, that was probably good for Kenny the first few years he was here. it was not all Kenny's fault. I will be the first. It was not all Kenny's fault, but he got a lot of hate. Now everybody loves him, of course, because he's the quarterback of the Steelers.
I remember Kenny, was that 2018, when Pitt came to ND. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like, that was a insanely, that was a very, for Notre Dame fans, that's like a Michigan State game, which makes a lot of sense with Pat Narduzzi, just stupidly tight, just kind of like last thing. But the one thing that kept, I think, a lot of fans worried was, Kenny Pickett, and Notre Dame fans hear this like all the time, on broadcast. Kenny Pickett grew up a Notre Dame fan. It's like, oh shit. Here's the storyline. Oh, the kid grew up a Notre Dame fan, in Jersey, and now he's playing for Pitt and finds himself in South Bend, in a battle, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I was actually really impressed with just kind of like how he handled that. Cause that's just that's a low hanging fruit for the media. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you grew up this fan and you're playing it. And I thought he handled it better than most, with a kind of like nonchalant as hell, which is the best way you can do those kind of things.
That's kind of Kenny to a T. I mean,
but Phil could learn from that, I think.
Yeah. That describes Kenny to a T. He's very, every interaction I've had with him, and this goes back to 2018 when I started covering the team and that was his first full year as a starter. He just seems very unaffected by it all. Like he's really good. He's really good talking to the media. And he kind of always has been, but he just doesn't let things like that affect him. Like he's very much like, I'm here to play football. Like that's it for him. He's like, as Steelers coach Mike Tomlin likes to say, he's singularly focused. So he's a big football like nerd and football junkie, and that's like his whole life. So it was social media and stuff was not an issue with Kenny. It was not an issue with Keaton Slovis either. So we'll see what happens with Phil this year, I suppose.
Keaton was still wiping off that scum from LA,
Right.
Kind of switching gears here just a little bit. Like college football as a whole, like we've seen like just massive change, right? Like I think it was starting in 2010 and then, with conference realignment, just, really getting going then. So, I mean, where do you kind of see this going? I mean, I think everybody has kind of like their own, everybody has their own thoughts about how this is going to end up. Some people like it. I know a lot of the national beat writers like seem to be licking their chops for college football to end up more like the NFL, which is just, to me, it's like very anti Beano Cook. We'll throw another pick right, in there. It's like all this, all this cleanness that they want is just isn't, for me, isn't very college football like. Like we had Ryan Nanny on, you know, last week, and it's just like this, you know, this is college football. This isn't the NFL. It doesn't have to be clean. I don't mind like four teams actually saying that they're the national, you know, none of that really bothers me. Mm-hmm. And I think we've, you know, as a sport, college football kind of peaked maybe 10, 15 years ago in the sense of like the, of its purest form.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you see this thing going? Do you think this is going to head towards something that's just so, you know, singularly focused on, you know, 30 teams, you know, and the, you know, I'm a Mac alum. Mm-hmm. You know, there's plenty of people out there in the Sun Belt, all that, like all the best stories from college football actually do still involve like mid-major schools. Like, right. So how do you think this is going to shake out? Where do you want this to shake out?
Oh, I don't know how it's going to shake out. I mean, it does seem like it's going to move towards like two super conferences. The ACC, like I mentioned before, the member schools are, their hands are kind of tied. I know that there has been discussion. Certainly I know from Clemson, because Clemson wants more of a piece of pie because
right.
They bring in more. So, I mean, there could be a school that sues to try to get out of it. This runs through, I think, 2036 or 37. So this is years down the road. I don't know if – it's hard to say, like, what's going to happen or what I think should happen. I don't know. I think it's going to move – probably towards like the big bloated Big Ten and then the big bloated SEC, but the teams that and where they wind up and who winds up joining which schools is going to be the question. And I think the ACC, like, you know, one thing that when all of this started a few years, when like Texas and Oklahoma decided to leave the Big 12 to go to the SEC, and then the news with USC and UCLA, I feel like when the Texas and Oklahoma decided to move, the ACC should have immediately tried to grab like Cincinnati, maybe West Virginia, and get them in the conference. And now, you know, West Virginia is obviously staying in the Big 12. Cincinnati is joining the Big 12. BYU, like these other teams are coming in. And I feel like the
ACC stayed very hoity-toity.
Yes. And I don't like, you know, there was this whole, like, the whole thing about like West Virginia doesn't have the academic standards and blah, blah, blah. And that's very like, they let in Louisville, and Louisville's like,
oh, there God. You go. There's the heat.
Louisville's academic standards are about the same as West Virginia. West Virginia's might be better. I mean, I think that that whole idea is just, you know, completely ridiculous. The Big Ten pulls this crap too. So,
right. They're getting away from the, you know, having to be what the hell's the membership that the Big Ten adores so much as the I can't think of it.
It's the research thing. It's like the AU or something.
AU or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. I think the ACC has completely fucked this thing up from the get go.
I think they really
there's room. I mean, I fully believe, like, even if they go like mega conference style, there is and has been room for, if you just want to go mega conferences, for four of them. Like, mm-hmm. there is plenty of talent, plenty of fan base, plenty of money out there for more than like, say, a couple of 20 team conferences. Like, there's plenty of stuff out there in the Big 12. The ACC has it up and down too, but the ACC, like the Big 12. Once they got Texas out, it was like, oh, we really need to scrape for dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, there's the Mormons. Let's go get them. Hey, right. Cincinnati and Central Florida had PowerPoint presentations that we blew off a few years ago. Bring them back on in the mix.
Right.
And the ACC is just kind of like stuck to their guns. Like, yeah, Maryland left, but, you know, we got Notre Dame for like a half thing. You know, maybe they'll want in. You know, how's that wine and cheese at the tailgate, y'all?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's been very – like, and they're just kind of like gripping for life. And Florida State and Clemson are a couple of schools that are seem like they are dipping their toes elsewhere and cannot wait for something to happen for them to have a reason, a stronger reason to jump ship.
Right. That's the thing is like, oh, I think the ACC is totally like dragged its heels on this. And, you know, it could really hurt them in the end, because if they were expecting Notre Dame to join full time and be their savior,
they're crazy.
I don't know what they're smoking, but because that's not going to happen. And yeah, I mean, if, you know, it's going to be, if a domino fall, I mean, if the first domino that's going to fall, that's going to render the ACC obsolete, will be Clemson or Florida State leaving, or even maybe Miami. You know, that's going to shake this entire conference. And I don't think anyone is really prepared for it.
Is that even a real possibility with the greater rights deal? I mean, we've had this conversation a few times on our show, and I've been adamant, like, if Florida State and Clemson leave, like, I think that that's a huge warning flag for anyone that enjoys Notre Dame's independence, because I think things start moving in a different direction, and, you know, Notre Dame starts, I mean, the ACC wouldn't be a viable scheduling opportunity for Notre Dame. Like that whole schedule, like, what are we doing here? We're going to play Duke, Wake Forest. I mean, it's just, and Wake Forest, like, every single year.
Yeah.
It becomes less and less of a thing. And then, you know, there's the Big Ten with all of our ancient, you know,
ancient
rivalries.
So, right. You know,
and that includes now USC in the mix. Yes. And so I'm like, look, if Florida State and Clemson bounce, I'm like, I would expect at some point that Notre Dame jumping in the Big Ten, just no one could say never. And if you're talking like 5-6 years from now, that whole thing could go that route. But the grant of rights thing that the ACC came up with when the raids started happening seems pretty strong, and it's very long to begin with.
Yes.
Is there a real option for Clemson and Florida State? Do you think that to get out of that earlier?
I don't know. I know that there have been arguments made by both schools. I have read this. I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand any of this stuff. it's all a lot. But I think I have read and heard that, like, if the ACC were to add a new member, if the membership changes, that they could renegotiate the grant of rights. But, I don't know. I don't know that there is a viable way for these teams to get out. I am certain that a couple of that schools like Clemson and Florida State will probably try to do so. It's probably cost prohibitive at the moment. But as that end date nears, you know, then it's probably going to become more likely, I would think. And like, as far as if it can be renegotiated, if they add a new member, then I don't know what they're doing. Like, they need.
Well, it kind of feels like if those two schools leave, it feels like Miami, like, is the next one out the door.
Right.
Like, is the ACC even able to like, can they even go to West Virginia and be like, hey,
exactly,
are you tired of, you ready to join us now?
I really feel like, you know, they should have made the move to add Cincinnati. Would have fit well with the, I mean, like, they would already have some sort of, like, they, you know, old Big East rivals with Pitt.
It's not a shame to bring in the old Big East. I mean, I don't understand. Like, I understand the UConn hate from some people, but, like,
right,
UConn was sitting there, and as bad as they are, it's not like they needed to go that route. They had to go, like, to the bottom of the barrel route.
Right.
If they had other options. They weren't offered it, and it is what it is. But ACC being a basketball conference, too, it just seemed like, you know,
right,
they're sitting there. Cincinnati's sitting there.
Yeah.
Why are you not playing footsie with West Virginia?
Right.
Like, there's big built-in rivalries there. I mean, like, Louisville-Cincinnati.
Exactly.
Is a game.
Exactly. I mean,
these are, and now you're elevating it from, like, what, back in Conference USA style, Big East style. Now it's like, this is like the Power Five showdown that you can get. And the ACC has completely screwed this whole thing up. And I wonder if it is just because they have a pipe dream of Notre Dame finally caving.
Yeah.
And it just seems so unrealistic.
That's exactly how I feel about it. I just think that they've dropped the ball with it. I don't know if they were expecting Notre Dame to be their savior, but that was really a bad call if that was the case. Because like you said, like when all this realignment, when USC and UCLA announced they were leaving the Pac-12 last year, you know, there was a lot of discussion just, you know, talking to, you know, colleagues and talking, you know, to my husband, who's a big college football fan, and talking to just a lot of other fans about this. And, you know, the feeling has kind of been like, well, if Notre Dame does wind up going to a conference, it's going to be the Big Ten, because that's right. Where all their rivals are. Like, that's where.
And that's where the money's at, too. Right. I mean, if Notre Dame does not mind making less money than other teams. Like, they don't care that Indiana and Purdue make more TV money.
Right, right.
But they want to be able to control. It's the American dream. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to do what they want to do. It's like everyone in the country hates it, but it's really the most American thing you could do to be like, true. You know what? I'm going to plant my flag and do my own thing and see how this goes. And for Notre Dame, it's gone pretty well most of the time, I would say. So yeah, it was definitely like trending. I think that was back in July and August. It seemed like that, like, not like we were waiting on an announcement, but like we would have, it wouldn't have surprised anybody if talks would have, you know, started then. And again, the ACC just seems to be dragging its feet so hard. It's like, I'm just not sure what they're doing here.
I really don't know either. Like, you know, when there was discussion about like, well, maybe the ACC can get Notre Dame full time. And I'm like, why would Notre Dame come here full time? Like, the Big Ten makes more money. USC is in the Big Ten. Michigan State is in the Big Ten. Purdue, like, all these rivals of Notre Dame, they're built in. Like, they're right there. I don't know why people would think that they would choose to come to the ACC, where, you know, none of their, like, main rivals are. Like, they do have the little rivalry with, you know, Pitt a bit, but, like, it's also for a lot less.
We'll count it.
Yeah.
I definitely count it.
I mean, Pitt is a rival, but then there's, you know, on this side, there's USC and Michigan and Michigan State and Purdue and all these teams they used to play every year before the conference realignment. So the idea of Notre Dame joining the ACC, like, yeah, it's nice to like think about, but it's something that's just like, that's a, you know, it's not going to happen. Just don't see how.
Well, it was a big, it was a big financial boost to 2020. Like, I say this in understanding this sounds cocky as hell, but there's so much truth. Notre Dame kind of saved college football in 2020. When the Big Ten decided, like, hey, we're not going to play this and that, it was finally Notre Dame going, you know what? We're going to play in the ACC. That really kind of put the foot up the Big Ten's ass. They kind of gave us a somewhat of a college football season, you know, that year.
Yeah.
But on top of that, like the revenues that the ACC pulled in 2020. And I could be wrong. I thought they were like, they broke the records that year. Notre Dame will make you some money.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you like them or not. If you like money, the Golden Helmets will make sure that you are paid.
For sure. I know that was a game that, you know, cause it happened during the pandemic, and Pitt and Notre Dame played in Pittsburgh. And I know that was a game that, like, you know, that it like kind of killed Pitt a little bit, that we couldn't have fans in the stadium. I don't know what the rules were then in Indiana. I know in Pennsylvania there were not. I don't think fans were allowed at all.
It was maybe 3,000 were allowed in.
Okay.
Students. I don't even know if it was that many. It was pretty.
I don't know if they allowed any in.
Pretty light.
And
I remember BC was cardboard cutouts, and that was it.
Okay. Yeah, it was. And that like when Notre Dame comes to Pittsburgh, like that game sold out. Pitt does not sell out a lot of its games. It'll sell out West Virginia, Penn State, Notre Dame.
Right.
Like, for sure. So.
And that's what Notre Dame does for like the rest of the, when Notre Dame goes on the road in the ACC, that is the, that attendance at that, that school, that's the highest. That's the big dog. Like even like in 2019, we were down in Louisville and I kind of cracked up and I'm looking around the stadium and I'm like, man, there's a lot of people here, but this isn't sold out. And then they announced it was a record crowd. I'm like, what the fuck, Louisville? You had a Heisman Trophy winner here. Oh, how did you not have more people here than this, you lousy university?
Right.
I have special hate for Louisville. But it kind of feels like the ACC doesn't want to, like, now that they've seen over the years since 14 or 13, mm-hmm. like how much money Notre Dame actually brings them, like they're not willing to rock that boat. Like
right.
they're not really for Notre Dame to like pull that hand away, be impressed. Like it's like having the fiance for like 10 years, right?
Yeah, I totally agree.
You should be married, and why didn't they marry you yet? But you're not willing to like really press that conversation because you just want to be with that person. And I think the ACC just really wants to be with Notre Dame right now, and the security they have.
The ACC is all, they're like fine being Notre Dame's side piece. They're like, you know.
I was making him like the longtime girlfriend. You're calling him a side piece.
Yeah. It's like, you can play your Southern Cal and your Stanford every year and whoever else. And, but just come over here and, you know, like maybe go to Wake Forest, play Pitt, play Virginia, like it's cool, man. Like
here's the key to our apartment.
Yeah, exactly. Like
the Yingling is in the fridge.
Whatever you want to do, like those other 7 weeks a year, we don't care. But like, just as long as like, you know, maybe you're making an appearance in Miami this year or Syracuse. You know, that would be really nice. If you could do that. So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with the ACC and where this is all going to lead. It's certainly something that I'll be keeping an eye on for sure. Because, I mean, I won't be surprised if there's like another major announcement this summer that two other teams have jumped ship from their conference and are joining the Big Ten or maybe the SEC.
They've been fun Julys for a while now. Like, that seems like. The meetings happen, and then all of a sudden, someone's out there. Brett McMurphy or somebody's running, like, hey, these two are ready. Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what? Like, I remember last year when it was like,
USC. I'm on vacation, damn it.
Yeah, USC and UCLA are joining the Big Ten. And it's one of those things where, like, I get a notification on my phone, and I'm like, I'm blink three times because I'm like, I didn't read that right. Like, that's. Why would the USC and UCLA be going to the Big Ten? And then it's like, then I get on Twitter and my entire timeline is like USC and UCLA, the Big Ten. It's one of those things. It's so bizarre when it happens.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we're winding down here. I want to finish up with asking you just about Pitt in this upcoming season. Just kind of give me a your quick thoughts and rundown about how you see Pitt shaking out this year.
I think it can go a lot of ways. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know how good I think that they're probably going to be somewhere between like the 7-9 win total. I kind of feel like that is something that Narduzzi has done since he has been here. Pitt is like, I feel like almost like the floor now for this program is like 8 wins. And that's an improvement from where it was before. I feel like that's kind of what he's done since he's been here is that should be the floor. Just looking at their schedule, like I said, I could see 7 wins, 8 wins. If they get lucky, maybe 9. I don't love them going to Notre Dame and Wake Forest in back-to-back weeks. The West Virginia game, I really think they should be able to beat West Virginia, but it is in Morgantown this year. So, and it's a rivalry, so who knows?
Revenge factor from last season too, a little bit.
Yeah. Duke was obviously a much better team last year, and they finished down in Durham. Cincinnati, I mean, I don't know what Cincinnati's going to look like this year with Fickell gone, how good they're going to be. But Pitt plays Cincinnati the second week of the season. I mean, a lot is going to depend on how well Phil can play, of course.
One moment.
I don't love their wide receiver depth. It's not very good. It was an extraordinarily deep group in 21 when they won the ACC, and it is not very deep right now. But they are in a Frank Cignetti offense now. So he'll utilize tight ends. They're going to run the football a lot. I think with Rodney Hammond, who he was hurt last year. For most of last year, I should say. He wasn't hurt the whole year, but most of last year. He'll be like their starting running back. And he's a good running back. Izzy Abanikanda had a fantastic season last year, and he's a great running back. And he has great speed and everything. And he may not have had as good of a year if Rodney Hammond hadn't been hurt in that first game against West Virginia, because I think Rodney Hammond would have just gotten more carries. They would have just rotated those guys, I think, a little bit more. The defense, you know, they lost obviously Kalijah Kancey, who was a first round pick from the defensive line. And, they lost, Savasia Dennis, their middle linebacker, who was a really great player for them, but
one of the best names in college football.
I know, it's a great name.
probably a pain in the ass to type out all the time though, right?
No, not really. No,
it would be for me. I would mess it up every time.
I was fine typing it out. One thing I had trouble with was not typing it out, but I'm so like, everybody calls Izzy Abanikanda Izzy. So a lot of times, you know, I like will live tweet the games and I'll be like Izzy. And then like, I start writing my story and I'll be like writing Izzy, and I'm like, no, it's Abanikanda. You have to write Abanikanda. Because everyone knows who Izzy is. And then I'd be writing like, even I would put like, oh, Izzy Abanikanda. And I'm like, that's not his real first name. It's Israel. It's, you know, everyone calls him Izzy. Servossier, actually. I would find the same issue with him because everybody calls him Voss. So I would tweet and say like Voss because like everybody called him Voss.
Right.
So yeah, I struggle with that. But anyway, I think their defense will be okay because, you know, that's Narduzzi's bag is his defense, and they have their defensive line is, you know, has been pretty good for the last several years. I think they have a really good defensive line coach. They have a lot of really interesting, a lot of highly ranked players that have not gotten a lot of time to this point. But they'll definitely see more time now that some of these other players have moved on to like the NFL. So I don't have as good of a feel for this team. Like last year, I didn't think that they were going to be obviously as good because they were losing Kenny and then they lost Jordan, but they still had a lot of the same guys returning. And so I kind of thought like they would wind up where they did. I thought they'd be an 8 or 9 win team last season. They finished 9-4. So this year I'm a little less sure because, you know, they had 6 players drafted. They lost like at least 13 guys, you know, the guys to the portal weren't as big of a loss as like, you know, they lost their top receiver from last year. In Jared Wayne, you know, they lost, Kalijah Kancey, like I said, and Servossier Dennis, they lost their 2 starting safeties. But so I don't have it's going to be interesting. I think we'll learn a lot more when they get into training camp of, you know, what this team's going to look like. I'm interested to see how Phil does. I know he's comfortable with Cignetti because he played under him at Boston College. So he knows the system. There's a familiarity there. I mean, Cignetti said after the spring game that he felt like he saw Phil grow and make strides just over the course of the 15 spring practices. I mean, take that with a grain of salt. It's his quarterback. But I mean, we'll find out, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I'm probably pretty quickly. I mean, Wofford aside, I mean, Cincy, West Virginia and North Carolina, that's, you know,
that's a nice
way to start the season to see where you're at.
Right.
I pay no mind to Virginia Tech and the collapsing of that program.
Yeah.
Just absolutely amazing how far they've fallen down.
They got some rebuilding to still do. Yeah.
Well, it seems like our October 28th meeting. It could be pretty interesting. I mean, that's Wofford, Cincinnati, West Virginia, North Carolina, Hokies, by Louisville, Wake Forest. Mm-hmm. So they don't miss Sam. They won't miss Sam Hartman that easily.
Right. Yeah.
After they get back from Winston-Salem.
Yeah. That's one thing. I'm like, I really don't like them having to go to South Bend a week after going to Wake. And you know, I mean, the last couple of times they've been out there, it has not gone well for Pitt. It's been tight games and they lose. And, you know, I do wonder, like, again, two of the guys that really bought it, you know, obviously they played Sam Hartman in the ACC championship game, and Hartman was kind of a disaster in the second half. Yeah.
Was that three picks in the second half, or was it four?
Yeah. It's funny to me because everyone thinks of that ACC championship game and they think of Kenny and the fake slide. And,
oh yeah.
And,
which I loved, by the way.
And, yeah. And, Eric Hallett, their free safety, won MVP because the defense picked off so many balls, and it's just so funny because it's, and he deserved it totally. You know, he played very well, but it was just, and the secondary, and I know that he had said this multiple times. He said, you know, hey, this isn't just me. You know, this isn't just the secondary. Like, our whole defense played so well. And if it weren't for the front seven, we would have never been able to do what we did. And that front seven really bothered Hartman. But Kalijah Kancey was there, and so was Savassier Dennis. And those are two pretty big pieces to kind of lose. Plus, Deslon Alexander. So they've lost some big pieces, but I do wonder if maybe, you know, they could rattle Hartman again, just with that pressure from up front. But
Wake didn't have Joe Alt and Blake Fisher and a few other guys along Notre Dame's offensive line as well.
Right. Yeah.
You might feel a little more, maybe a little bit more comfortable with like that, but it was definitely an issue. Is he, he did get rattled and he did force some things, and you get into that mode where every time it seems like you try to force something, he was making a mistake.
Yeah, that was honestly, like, that game was, again, this is something I don't even feel like people remember, but in that game, the two teams were kind of even, like, in the first half. And Kenny Pickett had taken a shot at some late in the first, and he went in the medical tent, and he was able to come back out, and he didn't miss it. I don't think he even missed a play. Because I think he went in the tent and Pitt was on defense, and then Wake Forest punted or scored or whatever they did, and Pitt got the ball back and they went three and out, and Kenny did not look good. And I remember thinking, like, oh God, he's hurt. Like, he's hurt. And he did come out and say later, like, way later, like, after he had been drafted and everything, like, yeah, I kind of had some messed up ribs. And
I had some internal bleeding.
I had kind of taken some shots in that Virginia game towards the end of the year. And then maybe I kind of re-aggravated some stuff in that ACC championship game. Cause he just didn't look good. He wasn't throwing right. Like, he just didn't look like himself. And I'm thinking, oh God, they're going to lose. Like, if Kenny's hurt, like, they're going to lose. And then it was like something like, I don't know, the defense, like, got into Hartman's head, and then it was like game over. Like, that D-line pressure just really got to him. And I also don't think Notre Dame will be running the type of offense that Wake was running with him.
I don't think the slow mesh is on the agenda this year.
The riding the mesh and the slow developing plays as, you know, like, it was
most difficult thing to watch.
It was so bizarre to me too, because, like, you know, Kalijah Kancey, he didn't have, like, the stats from that game, but just his presence, I think, really rattled Hartman. And Kancey, like, I mean, I wrote numerous articles about him leading up to the draft, and every draft analyst, oh, he's so quick. He's got that quick twitch. He's got this short area quickness. He's got this burst. He's explosive. And I'm like, why would you run this slow developing offense against a dude that is so fast? right there, like, and, you know, that was something that it was I think it really got them in the end. Of course, you can't change your offense for one game, but the slow mesh was not going to work very well against that defense. And that the defense is eventually what won them the game. Because, you know, like I said, I do think Kenny was hurt. I don't think people realize how hurt he was, but I definitely think he was hurting more than we knew at the time.
We'll definitely keep an eye on that for that matchup this season with Notre Dame and Pitt. And I also think, maybe Phil would do him a favor. Like, I know it's easy to call. The easiest call would be to Kenny Pickett if you're Phil, but maybe he should get into that, dig down a little deeper and find a Notre Dame supervillain, Tyler Palko.
Oh, man.
And talk to him a little bit. But look, Tyler Palko is an all-time Notre Dame villain. Although I say that with a lot of love, because I bad guys are just better in college football. Mm-hmm. And not to say that Palko is a bad guy, but it was just like he came in, took care of Notre Dame, had the interview afterwards that Tom Hammond was just so aghast by. If you're Phil, don't call Kenny Pickett. Call Tyler Palko.
That's a really interesting tip. That's really interesting. That might be a good call. Is to call, give up, give Tyler Palko a ring and
not
and
that I'm giving any tips out here, Pat Narduzzi.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he can go next door and ask Kenny, and but Tyler Palko, Kenny, like, I don't know. Did he even throw for 100 yards against Notre Dame? I'm not 100% sure. That was just a bad game offensively.
Yeah, that's the wrong guy to ask. It's the wrong guy to ask.
So maybe Tyler Palko is the move, and then maybe Phil will swear on national TV. I mean, that would be nice.
But he'll do it like in a Truth Social post or something like that. Like he'll find his way on there right before the game.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, hey, Amanda, thank you so much. You have homework. Go find your spirit box.
I am going to find the spirit
box. Because a piece of you is in that box, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. A piece of me is in there.
So you need to find that, find out about that, and let's see what we can do about making that a traveling trophy one day.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming on to the show. I really enjoyed talking to you. Everybody, she's a great follow on Twitter. Everybody should be following everybody's beat writers. I'm at Amanda F. Gotze on Twitter. Give her a follow. Thank you again, Amanda, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was a great time. Really enjoyed talking to you.
All right. We'll definitely try to get you back on at some point, maybe in the season or after the season, and we will chat again.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, all right, everybody. Thanks once again for tuning into the Earned 5-Star Podcast. Another big thank you to Amanda for joining us. Just a lot of good stuff there. I cannot wait to. I really can't wait to get to the season and see how all this stuff shakes out. Was really surprised by the Pat Narduzzi love. He loved Notre Dame. That's just was not the direction I was ready to go to. But we'll take it. We'll take it for what it is. So just want to remind everybody, get on over to Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating. Leave a review. Any review that you leave, we will read word for word on the next Earn 5-Star Podcast. And it'll seem kind of like a back-to-back thing. I believe if you're listening to this on Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, you should get a new Earn 5-Star Podcast in your pod machines come Thursday morning. So we're churning it out over here. Not sure who the next guest will be on our little interview series, but I can promise you, they are going to keep coming. We're going to squeeze as many of these in as we can. Who knows? Maybe we'll make sure we'll grab someone that is a Notre Dame opponent this time around. And I don't know, but really appreciate Amanda and her time and her insight on the show today. So for everybody here at the Earn 5-Star Podcast, thanks for listening. And as always, go Irish.